welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles, the Oklahomans, Oklahoma State football podcast. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Unruh. We're back at Stone Cloud, another hopping night here.
It's busy.
It is.
They've got live music.
They've got us.
They've got us. Yeah, we got to start with us. We're here.
Right, exactly.
Then there's live music.
Yes.
There's a pop-up food stand again,
right,
which is a new Tuesday thing. They're regulars just like us. And then there's regulars here that we see every week.
Yeah.
And then there's, I think, political stuff going on, too, because today is everyone should be voting.
Exactly.
It's too late for you to vote if you've not voted and you're watching this.
That is correct.
But you should have voted today.
That's exactly
I'll
right.
just say that. You should
got
have
some,
voted.
Got some dogs here, too. Lots of them.
Lots of dogs.
Dog-friendly place. Lots going on.
The garage doors open in
it
front
is.
Of us,
How
letting
fantastic
all the
is this?
Wonderful weather in. This is great.
It's an amazing night here at Stone Cloud. If you're not here right now, you're missing out. So, sorry. All right, well, let's jump into it. We will, of course, take a brief look back at the Kansas game, look ahead to Iowa State, blackout game coming up. That's always an intriguing thing, always
yeah.
lots of fun, even though it's a 2:30 game.
Night game would be much better blacked
right.
out. But
worked out much better for Bedlam last year.
OSU doesn't play night games in Big 12 Conference,
right.
if you haven't heard. So.
Yeah, not happening this year. All right, we'll get into all of that. We'll get into all the regular stuff, take you behind the scenes of our visit with the players today. But we got to start with what you drinking there, Jacob?
I am drinking the Havana Affair.
Havana
I
Affair.
I went very simple, very good, though. Pilsner.
It is good.
Today. It's a good beer, a good strong beer on a day that feels like just a good strong day to have a nice
right.
beer.
Can't beat it. That is really good stuff. I am not – this is not my beer, of course.
Oh, that's right.
As always. This beer belongs to Evan Troy. A two-time winner of the score prediction contest.
Oh, yeah, he was
contest.
The OG winner.
He was the original. Right from the start, Evan's been with us. I think he's predicted a score every week. This is
yeah.
his second time getting it right. He had Kansas winning 35-31, overestimated the Cowboy offense a little bit,
yeah.
but otherwise pretty close right there in the ballpark. So for Evan, I am drinking Holt My Beer in honor of Evan and Election Day.
Yeah, Mayor Holt's not up for election
Mayor,
in Oklahoma
no,
City.
Mayor Holt, no votes for
he
Mayor
He already
Holt.
Won his election recently. I'm
exactly.
pretty, not, you know. In the it's last year, right?
A so, couple years now.
Couple years.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
And time
so,
flies.
Anyway. And listen, if he was up for election right now, this beer would go a long way.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
would be a very strong
It's a really good
strategy.
Beer. We've had, you know, I had that a few weeks back now.
Right.
You get to enjoy it. It's a really strong beer.
Really good stuff. So to Evan and to Oklahoma City's Mayor Holt, cheers.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
All right. Well... we also need to point out we want our listeners and our viewers on YouTube to go check out the Cowboy Sports Minute on Oklahoman.com, subscribe to our newsletter, get all the good Oklahoma State updates that you're looking for. Of course, we're crossing over now into basketball season, which has begun. Wrestling's not too far away. And then, of course, you got all the spring sports up ahead, you know, in a few more months. So
time is flying by.
It really is. It's buzzing right through. And lots of news and information in the Cowboy Sports Minute, so go subscribe to that as well. All right, is that that's about everything to set the table for
I
this,
think so,
this
yeah.
wonderful podcast.
The table is set.
The table is set. So we'll jump in. One last thought on Kansas, because we covered most of it in our post-game podcast, as we always do. But anything that is still looming, still hanging out there?
Did we really talk about the pass rush? Not being there.
Not a lot.
Now, granted, Kansas didn't throw the ball a bunch.
Right. They didn't have to.
But this is the few weeks now the pass rush has not been up to OSU standards.
Right.
And so I think that's concerning, their inability not to sack the quarterback per se, but to get there.
Just getting there.
They're just not getting there. They're not getting any kind of pressure, and that's concerning. It's something they're focusing on this week, too. Along with stopping the run, the primary focus is stopping the run now.
Right.
But because the pass rush can't be there if you can't stop the run.
Right.
So
exactly.
I think that's the focus. And so that still sticks in my mind.
Yeah. And as part of the pass rush struggling, the defensive line had been really strong in tackles for loss, making a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. Mason Cobb was getting freed up to make a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. Those numbers have tumbled as well. Along with this, you know, going into the Texas game, which seems like an eternity ago.
It does seem like an eternity ago.
Oklahoma State was top 20 in those two categories, sacks and tackles for loss. And those have faded hard in the last 2 weeks. And I think that's not, I don't want to say that it's a major factor, but it's certainly an important piece of why the last 2 weeks have gone the way that they have.
Yeah.
They need that defensive line to be impactful, and it just doesn't feel like those guys are making the impactful type of plays that we were seeing from them, not just last year, but early this season.
Which is strange, considering it's mostly the same guys.
Right.
There's not a ton of new faces or inexperienced faces there. That defensive line still guys that played a lot last year.
Yeah.
That were so good.
Yeah.
So it is. It's baffling.
It's really strange. And the weird thing is, okay, so injuries have been a topic for weeks now, but it's almost all been on the offensive side. Now the defensive line, they started struggling. Now they're getting hit by injuries.
Yeah.
And now things get a little bit nerve-wracking. Tyler Lacy was only able to play 19 snaps against Kansas. Maybe they bailed on it early just to protect him, but still, they need more than that out of him. Colin Oliver played 21 snaps. They need him on the field more than that. That wasn't a health issue, I don't think.
Yeah.
But they need more out of him. Trace Ford, I want to say it was 9 snaps. It was less than 15. I know. I don't remember exactly the number.
He got hurt in the second quarter, right? But it was kind of late.
Second quarter injury, but yeah,
middle second quarter.
Hadn't played a ton up until that point. And you and I have talked about this on this podcast. He had really come in back into form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you started seeing some glimpse of it there, like the Arizona State game, second game of the season. Then it just kept growing, and he was really looking like himself again by about third or fourth week of the year, and was really making a big impact, batting down balls at the line of scrimmage, which he has that crazy knack for doing, all those kinds of things. So, you know, if this ends up being a long-term injury with him, that's a damaging thing. You're looking at Ben Kapinski, who's been really solid.
Yeah.
But you're asking a lot more of him as well. So it's a, you know, and Brendan Evers, though his numbers weren't necessarily great, he was an experienced guy in the middle that could eat up some blockers and help guys out behind him. And they don't have that level of experience at the defensive tackle spot right now. And so start piling all of those up, and it gets kind of scary for what this defensive line is facing going forward.
Yeah.
As far as looking back at Kansas from my perspective, I can't think of anything that jumps out that I don't want to talk about later.
Right.
For instance, Preston Wilson had some fascinating stuff that we talked about tonight that I'll get into.
Colin Oliver had fascinating stuff too. I was trying to save some of that for later too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Langston Anderson as well, and then Cam Smith was the fourth guy that we got to talk to. So we'll share some of that here in just a little bit as we go behind the scenes of post practice tonight. That said, we look ahead to a game against Iowa State. Last Saturday afternoon, I felt like even if Oklahoma State is going forward without Spencer Sanders for another week, you know, still dealing with the injuries that they're dealing with, I felt this was a game that they could go scratch out enough points to win, because the Iowa State offense had been miserably bad. And then
they scored 31.
They scored 31 on West Virginia, which is, I mean, West Virginia is not a world beater.
It was a home defense, game against West Virginia.
Right.
You know.
But that I did not see that type of number coming from this Iowa State offense. So to see them go be that productive in a Big 12 game makes you a little bit more nervous about what's ahead for this Cowboy team on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I can't get a read on this, because it just seems like it's all defense, no offense, and then that throws, you know, like I said, it throws a wrench. And the way the defense has been playing for OSU right now, how much faith do you have they can really stop a team right now?
Right.
And it's weird to say that.
It feels very strange.
I've never had to say that as long as I've been covering the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still think I lean OSU's figuring out a way. But they've got to figure out a way to score, because you and I were talking earlier. I think it's going to take at least, you know, Iowa State gives up, 16.3 points a game.
Right.
I think it's going to take 3 touchdowns for OSU to win this game.
It might.
3 touchdown issues, you know, the score-wise.
Right.
They're going to have to get to 20-21, I think, to win this
game. They're going
to
be in that neighborhood and play well on defense.
Yeah.
And that the way things feel right now off of the last 2 games feels like you're asking a lot of this team. So it's a really weird scenario to be in based on the things that we were saying 2 weeks ago sitting here recording this podcast, the Tuesday after the Texas game, when you're looking at, feels like most of their toughest games are behind them.
Yeah.
Kind of a you know, you had Kansas State coming up, but it wasn't terribly scary.
Right.
Kansas was falling off. Iowa State looked like nothing at that point. West Virginia looked like nothing at that point.
OU struggled.
OU was a mess. And it felt like they were going to be able to kind of cruise through the last portion of their schedule and into the Big 12 title game. And
they've fallen on their face.
Bottom fell out. Posing the question that Barry Trammell so eloquently posed to Mike Gundy on Monday, what the hell happened?
I wish I knew.
Right?
I've never seen anything like this where you see a team that's literally number eight in the country.
Right.
They're the eighth-ranked team in the country. They just came back to beat Texas. And nothing has gone right since. Literally nothing has gone right. And, like, they just fell apart. I've never seen a team just the bottom falls out so drastically.
Right.
And then they're floundering and they can't figure it out. It just felt like last week was a continuation of the struggles with Kansas State and they couldn't figure out how to stop it.
Right.
You know, that keeps carrying over. I mean, they're toast, but right. The sense I got tonight is they feel a little bit more fired up and motivated.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And I think that's going to factor into it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a piece of the puzzle we should go ahead and address, because everybody wants to know, is Spencer Sanders going to play?
We have no idea.
No clue. It's Mike Gundy's keeping it completely in the dark at this point. He got directly asked, do you expect Spencer to play again at some point this season?
Wouldn't
shut down that question.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of unknown at this point. Then you factor in the redshirt status of Garrett Rangel. Yeah. He's played in two games, can play in two more and still redshirt. How much do you push that issue? You know, at some point, it's about winning games, but it's also taking care of yourself for the future. You've got to weigh that in at some point. Regardless of which side of the issue you come down on, whether you decide to go ahead and burn the redshirt and play him or not, you've got to weigh that option and see how that plays into what's best for your program. You know, Mike Gundy told us on Monday after the press conference he didn't want to play Mason Rudolph his freshman year.
Right,
Those last three games at the end of that season. They did. I think it helped.
Mason said he was going to play.
Right,
exactly. Didn't Mason insist to play?
That's the way it sounded.
Gundy said.
I assume now that there were others on Mason's side in that debate, but Gundy did not want to play him at that point.
Yeah, no.
So that's going to become a factor at some point, unless Spencer's able to come back and finish this season. So, you know, and we're at an interesting point in the season now where you've got most likely three regular season games. So we're gonna have to discuss the Big 12 championship and the mathematical possibilities of that still being out there.
But still there.
Three regular season games and a bowl game. Now, guys that haven't played at all to this point can come out and play and play four games and maintain a red shirt. Guys that are red shirt eligible at this point.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot, because a lot of the guys that they wanted to play have played in at least a game. So, but there are some other guys like, you know, we've been waiting to see what was going to happen with Blaine Green, the tight end who's been injured all through the season to this point. Now, if he gets healthy with that wrist injury, he's able to come back and play. Jaden Bray has only played in one game to this point. You imagine he's going to get back at some point. They've still got redshirt capabilities with him. So
yeah.
There's a lot out there that you have to got a lot of juggling to go on at this point. So I kind of got sidetracked there. But
here's my answer on Spencer.
Yeah.
My gut says he does not play this week.
I feel that way as well.
It's my gut. Pure gut.
Yeah.
Speculation. He was not at practice today. I didn't see him, and I don't think it was his grandfather died, which condolences to the Sanders family.
Yeah.
So I would imagine, you know, he was not there today. That's not going to factor into it. Spencer can miss a practice and still play on Saturday.
Exactly.
But, you know, so I'm just saying we didn't see him at all today.
Right. So no word as to whether he's walking around in a sling or in pads or any of it. It's family situation that he was tending to, we assume, at this point. So, that said, I think this offense has to feel somewhat comfortable with what Garrett Rangel did, and mm-hmm. we talked about a lot in the post game podcast. But the rebound that he made after the two early interceptions, cruising through the middle stretch of that game, mm-hmm. was really solid. After the second pick, he completes 17 of the next 22 throws. They go score a couple of touchdowns. The offense looked not great, but better than it had in the
And I think the not great was, you know, they pulled Dominic Richardson early. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have a full receiver group out there. So I think that factored a little bit in the not great aspect of it.
Right.
Because I think otherwise, I think it looked close to normal.
Yeah, I would agree.
They just got no help from the defense.
That's
and
true.
So, you know, I think that's a good sign moving forward, and I think OSU has a lot of confidence in Rangel moving forward.
Yeah, I think what they got out of him as a true freshman in his first start is very encouraging. And I know a lot of fans, or at least a vocal minority of fans, bailed on him quickly after the two picks. But I think long term, I think this guy showed a lot of promise for what he's capable of, not just this year, but beyond.
And Mike Gundy was never going to pull Rangel after the first two picks. It's not fair.
No.
Not fair to any quarterback.
It's not fair, and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You bail on him that quick, and you stunt his confidence right off the bat.
Yeah.
And who knows what happens to him from
that point. He wouldn't have done it to a fourth-year guy that's making his first start.
No.
He would have left him in there. He's got to have a chance to figure it out.
Yeah.
And he did.
And he did. He looked much better. And, you know, like we talked about on the post game, he got into a situation late where he's just trying to make a play and ball gets batted and gets picked off. So he had really reined things in from that point and was making some good throws. Had some miscommunication issues, which you expect from a guy who's, you know, been a backup all season and is making his first start. And he's playing with receivers that were backups as well. Langston Anderson had not caught a pass since September of 2019.
Yeah, the second game that season.
Exactly.
So, McNeese State. It's one of the first games I covered on the beat. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I remember that.
Yeah, so
wild.
It's they were dealing with a lot of issues and overcame a lot of them, and I think that was the most impressive thing, I think, that came out of it in my mind. So, all right, well, we'll talk Big 12 title game and address that looming thing. Well, we'll save that for the bowl conversation later.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to get into the bowls, but let's take the folks behind the scenes of Tuesday night post practice. I mentioned the guys that we got to talk to. You visited with Colin Oliver, and I didn't get to. I feel a little sad.
Yeah,
because Colin is always
Colin's a lot
of fun to talk to.
He's fun. Here's what I learned quick off the bat: they're fired up. They're ready to throw on some pads, some deodorant, and get on the field and hit some guys.
All right.
And I think they feel really good about where the direction was today. He said today, Tuesday, it was one of the best practices they've had in a while. Very vocal, lots of yelling, lots of – in a good way. He said it wasn't negative. They weren't bickering at each other. It was lots of yelling, getting guys fired up, getting things going in the right direction, he felt like, which I thought was huge because I think – he didn't say, but it felt like there was a little bit of some – fire gone. You know, Mike Gundy talked about yesterday, he thought the players were fatigued on defense.
Right.
The technology they used in the shoulder pads said they were slower, things like that. And you got the sense that Colin's like, they're fired up. They're tired of this. He kept saying, we know we're not this bad. We know this is not the level we should be playing at, and they're going to fix it.
He is a key piece of this because, as I mentioned, only 21 snaps from him. They're going to need more production out of him down the stretch. Mm-hmm. He's an important piece. And I think that, you know, it's been a rough season for him because people know who he is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that has changed the dynamic. But they're going to need him to be an impact guy, not just this week, but Bedlam in 2 weeks, West Virginia, to give them an opportunity to get this defense back on track the way that they want it to go.
And I asked him about the pass rush specifically. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, what's the issue? What are you guys doing to fix it? He said, it all starts with stopping the run. He said, you can't have a pass rush if you can't stop the run because they're not going to throw the ball.
Right.
Do things like that. They're not getting off their blocks well enough, off the blockers well enough. They're not getting the release. They're not doing things they need to do to stop the run to help them in the pass rush. And that's what he said. They're focusing primarily this week on stopping the run. That leads to other things.
And that's going to be critical.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are going to have to play a lot more snaps, assuming that Tyler Lacy is limited in some form.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not. Maybe he's fine.
I don't expect Trace Ford's going to play.
It doesn't feel like that. Obviously, that was a scary situation, him going down, grabbing his knee, then appearing on crutches on the sidelines. That's a scary situation for a guy that's had a couple of ACLs
and
had knee problems in his past. We don't know what the injury is at this point, but we'll see. We'll see what comes about with that. But if you're without him for the rest of the season, that, like I mentioned, it's Ben Kapinski is more
Kapinski,
involved.
Yep. Walter Scheid.
Walter Scheid, Nathan Latu, who Latu, they were using. He didn't play a ton, but they started using him in the speed rush package on third downs, playing him as an interior guy alongside Lacy, which I thought was interesting and could be a unique development to watch as they're trying to do some different things with that pass rush. So something to keep an eye on. You also got to visit with Preston Wilson. I did too. But
we both did, yes. Yeah. You know, I started there and just kind of asked about – he was talking about the run game when I first walked up. But then, you know, I asked about just what he thought at Rangel. Mm-hmm. And he said he was really good, was really poised, was really impressed with the way he responded to things, the way he responded after the interceptions. He got defensive on the interception part a little bit that I asked.
Yeah,
that was not what I was asking. I was just asking how he responded after that and what he saw because it looked good. And he said, well, the interceptions were – not entirely on Garrett. There's a lot of things. The offensive lineman missed a block. There was different things like that, or the receiver's routes were a little off, things like that. Got defensive there. I don't blame Preston because, as we found out in this conversation, Preston is very defensive of quarterbacks.
Very protective.
Physically,
emotionally,
mentally, emotionally, everything. Preston is the bodyguard. Literally, he's the bodyguard of the quarterbacks.
Yeah. That was my favorite development out of all of this. Credit to Marshall Scott of Pistols Firing for tweeting out the information about he noticed Preston immediately finding the quarterbacks and helping them get off the field. And so I asked Preston about it, and he told the story that, you know, he felt like they were going to rush the field, so he went immediately and started talking to guys, explained to them what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So game ends. He realizes it's coming, goes over, gets Spencer over by the cops, is what his description, where he was safe, immediately goes back to the field to find Garrett Rangel, get him off the field. So
he called. He said, he's the quarterback. He's valuable.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's an excellent way to describe a quarterback. He's the valuable guy.
Right.
Don't let him get hurt.
I was also very impressed in listening to Preston talk about his level of communication. It sounds like just with the quarterback in general, but especially last week in dealing with Rangel, making sure
it sure seemed like everywhere Garrett turned, Preston's right there.
Right. Exactly.
How you doing?
Yeah.
How's it going? You doing okay?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
How you feel?
That's exactly how it felt.
It felt like every corner. He walked around the corner of the hotel. There's Preston Wilson standing.
Yes.
What's up?
That's exactly how it felt, and it was it was really entertaining. As a cute little dog is walking through right by us, that's always fun. I love this place.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, back to but Preston's level of communication with his quarterback, and I understand. Yes, they're the center, and as he pointed out, the guy's got his hands under your butt.
I almost made a comment. Well, thank God that's a lot of shotgun formations, right?
Right.
It's not, you know, it doesn't happen often.
Yeah. But he really seemed to be going out of his way to make sure that that line of communication was open,
mm-hmm.
that they made sure that they were making things as comfortable as possible for Garrett, and that Garrett was aware that he could voice his concerns to Preston.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably very important for Garrett. We obviously don't get to talk to him because he's a first-year player and they're off limits at this point. But I think that had to be highly valuable for a guy coming in and, I mean, as a true freshman being thrown into that situation mid-season, middle of a week, you take over and you've got to be the guy in charge all of a sudden.
Yeah.
To have somebody like that that is communicating with you that way has to be very important. So I was really impressed by that from talking to Preston. I asked him about the fourth down fumbled snap when they went under center. His take was interesting. I didn't expect that. I you know, it looked like a moment where a true freshman just got a little bit hurried and mm-hmm. maybe panicked a little bit in that situation, doing something he hadn't done in his career at that point in a game, and maybe, you know, maybe stepped back a little too quick, got his hands out a little too quick, whatever it was. Preston said the whole play felt rushed.
Yeah.
Felt like they were treating it like a tempo play when it didn't need to be. And he said that was a learning moment for them as an offense and he and Garrett specifically to understand, all right, let's make sure we're calm as we go into the situation because we need to make sure we operate very effectively.
You could go turbo with Spencer.
Right, right.
But in that situation, he's right. They needed to slow down.
Yeah. And so he felt that was something that led to that fumble on fourth down that obviously, as he mentioned, you go score there, changes the dynamic of the game. Mm. Who knows what happens from that point. But he guarantees it's not going to happen again. They're going to be prepared the next time this situation arises. So really important development right there as well. So anything else from Preston Wilson?
Pretty good. And you talked with Lance Anderson.
I did.
Which I didn't get over to him or Cam Smith, so mm-hmm. you talked to both of them.
Langston was a lot of fun. We went back deep into his injury history. He's broken a bone in his foot twice in the previous two seasons. Had to rehab through them both. Talked about, you know, the frustrations that come with that and having to work your way back. He took us through the incident when he actually broke the foot last year in the Missouri State pregame. Said it was a complete freak accident. It wasn't even really an accident. Something just happened. He caught a pass in warmups. He said literally like 10 minutes before the game started.
Wow.
Caught a pass, and as he was slowing down, felt something pop. But he said his adrenaline was going like crazy. Didn't think anything about it. But about 5 minutes later, he was calming down and all of a sudden realized, okay, I got some serious pain going on right here.
Huh.
They go and get it checked out and find out that he had broken his foot. So, this was a really big get in recruiting when they landed this guy late in that class in the 2019 class. And obviously he redshirted in 2019. Injuries in 20 and 21. And, you know, he's dealt with some injuries this year. He hasn't suited up for over half of the games this season. Been on the road the last 2 weeks when they're dealing with some other injuries. So him getting healthy at this time has been ideal for them because they're dealing with some other injuries. And, you know, I pointed it out before the game started on Saturday. They only had four outside receivers on the trip. Now, Cale Cavanis is a guy that's played outside some.
Right.
They moved him into a slot now. But they only had four guys. Langston's backing up Stephon Johnson Jr., who he's had a couple of drops in the last couple of games, had some other issues. And so it felt like they wanted to maybe see what Langston can do. Comes out and has three catches for 61 yards.
Yeah, I thought he played really well.
Yeah, he did. There was one miscommunication, but it's hard to know if that was him or Rangel, where he kept going. Rangel thought he was stopping, and they threw it way behind him. But other than that, really solid, caught the ball when he had the opportunity when they needed him to. And like you said, first catch since September of 2019.
So here's how many years of eligibility does Langston have left? Like four?
Let's see. He's redshirt junior plus a COVID year, so only two more after this.
Two more, okay. It just seems
it should have four with all the injuries he's
had. Yeah, I mean, I feel like he should just be able to be here as long as he wants at this point.
Right, exactly.
Which could be beneficial for OSU to have two more years with him.
Right.
He's talented.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it was he's a really I don't know, I can't think of a good word to describe his personality, but he just seems like a happy dude.
That's good.
And pretty laid back.
He should be happy now. He's getting on the field and he's making some catches.
Exactly. He talked about the fact that being a backup receiver, he and Garrett have actually worked together quite a bit. You know, going back to spring ball, fall camp, over the summer, all of that. So he felt some comfort with Garrett that maybe other guys didn't necessarily feel because he had been working with the twos and the threes most of the season. So he felt that helped him ease in a little bit better and it probably helped Garrett as well to see a familiar face out there.
So what about Cam? What did Cam say?
Cam was a good dude. He obviously I mean, I brought this up in asking him the question. Like, a month and a half ago, he was a third-string corner, probably playing some special teams. I don't even remember.
Sure, he probably was.
That was it. Like, there was no real concern when he showed up on game day of getting in and playing cornerback. And he's played a ton since that Texas Tech game when Corey Black and DeMarco Jones both got hurt within, seemed like, the first, like, 5 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it actually
was. It's pretty quick.
It was really early. He played a ton of snaps that day and has been a regular in the lineup ever since, because especially when they've moved Jabbar Muhammad in to take that Thomas Harper spot at the nickel safety, Cam has been the guy. Basically, they feel more comfortable with Cam Smith being on the field than whoever is the backup to Thomas Harper.
Yeah.
Which whoever they would go with there is a less experienced guy than Cam is. And so bringing him in, moving Jabbar inside, has made them more comfortable with the five that they're putting on
and
the
field. And I don't think they want Sean Michael Flanagan and Kendall Daniels and Jason Taylor, all three there. You need a cover guy there. There's not a coverage safety there.
Right.
As a nickel guy, as you will. And so that's what it is, I think, right there. I think in an ideal world, when you think of the depth chart, you put those three together, but I think that leaves some coverage to be desired.
Right, exactly. You've got to have we've talked about this before, but Tanner McAllister was a corner first, came in and started playing that spot. Thomas Harper was a corner first, came in and started playing that spot.
Christian Holmes played that spot a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So they've done things with guys who are naturally cornerbacks in that spot because they feel more comfortable with what they're asking them to do is in coverage. And Jabbar seems to fit that mold pretty well. Maybe that's something if Cam or DeMarco Jones or somebody else continues to develop in the future, maybe that's a move they make more permanently at some point. But Jabbar's been really good at corner, so
it's hard to
make that change as well.
That's tough.
Jabbar ended up with 7 tackles on Saturday, which for a corner, that's asking a lot to come up in run stop, all of those things. So he's been pretty solid, I think, when they've asked him to move. Mike Gundy did point out they'd really like to not have to be making him play two positions.
Yeah. He said it's not fair to Jabbar, which I agree.
I agree with that as well. Yeah. But so Cam talked about, he said that he's always the type who thinks about, I might need to play today.
Mm.
So he was preparing mentally, paying attention to the game, still invested the way that he needed to be before Corey and DeMarco got hurt that day. So mentally he was in the game and he was ready to go play. Obviously getting on the field, dealt with the nerves and the butterflies and all of those things. And that sort of stuff has calmed down as he's played more and more. But he's definitely appreciative of the opportunity that has come along and feels like he's doing his best to take advantage of it. So, really good kid. I'm pretty sure this is the first time he's done interviews at Oklahoma State. He's obviously a redshirt freshman.
I've never talked to him.
I don't remember any time that. And like I said, I mean, a month and a half ago, he was third string.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that anybody would have requested an interview with him prior to this week. So it was.
Welcome to the show, Cam.
Exactly.
Welcome to the show.
It was really good, really well spoken, fun to talk to. So really enjoyed that as well. So anything else from Tuesday night?
No, I think we've covered it all.
We covered it all pretty well. Let's dive into. We got to talk about the Big 12 championship game. Because it feels so weird to say it after the way things have gone the last 2 weeks.
They can still get there.
It is still not just mathematically possible. I mean, it's not crazy.
No.
It's not some ridiculous scenario that has to happen.
Yeah, we're not pulling this out of thin air thing. Right. We could get this. Yeah. No,
this is not like me in July when the Cubs are 18 out and I'm counting them up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
if this happens, this happens.
Right, yeah, exactly. No, this isn't that type of scenario. Now, the toughest part of this is they've got to win out.
Yeah.
And based on what's happened in the last 2 weeks, it's hard to sit here and say they can go win out. But these are all going to be winnable games. These are all going to be tightly contested games that they should be in. So with that, you would think that there's at least the possibility that they could go win out.
Yeah.
Then, you know, they've already got tiebreakers over Baylor and Texas. All the teams ahead of them are playing against each other in different matchups. So those teams are going to be teams ahead of them losing and falling back to them. Excuse me. And so it's not a ridiculous scenario to sit here and say they could be in Arlington a month from now.
If Texas beats TCU this week.
Right.
And then, but Baylor hasn't played. TCU has not played Texas and Baylor.
Right.
Baylor has not played Kansas State, right?
I think that's right. Baylor
or Texas.
And Texas got to play, too.
And so, yeah, like they start, you know, and then suddenly OSU wins out. And
they would only need Kansas to lose once.
Kansas needs to lose once. Kansas State needs to lose once.
Or twice.
Twice. They lose twice.
There's a scenario where they can end up in a three-way tie that OSU would have the advantage over them. But it's
complicated.
That gets complicated. Mathematically, they need them to lose twice to jump
and
them.
So Kansas State still has Baylor, right?
I can't remember all the schedule at this
Kansas
point.
Kansas State may be the problem here.
Right. That's the most difficult one.
Kansas, though. They got to play Kansas.
Right. They do.
So, yeah. I mean, it's not this far-fetched thing of what we're saying. There's still a chance, like the Jim Carrey. You're saying there's a chance.
Right.
But there really is a legitimate chance here because I could see OSU doing this.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, how wild that'd be.
These are their three easiest Big 12 opponents that are left. These are the three
worst
teams.
Which is weird saying that with Bedlam being in there.
Right.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah. And it's at OU, which is not great.
That's a house of horrors for OSU. But I don't know. Maybe it happens.
It's not.
How crazy would that be?
Not crazy. It would be pretty wild if they.
You know what the benefit of that happening would be?
What's that?
We get an extra week here for a podcast.
Oh, we don't just get to come the rest of our lives?
Well, I mean, I guess we do.
Every Tuesday night?
There's
we can leave the iPad at home, just not record anything.
Well, that's true. We could do that. But there's an extra podcast here.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. All right, with that, I want to transition to what I wrote about for, was that today's paper?
Yes.
The last 2 days have been a blur with all the basketball and football and everything
it's been
going
nuts.
On. So today's paper, Tuesday's paper, I wrote about all the bowl possibilities, and essentially anything other than the playoff is on the table. The full scale, from the Sugar Bowl to the First Responders Bowl, it's all a possibility for this Oklahoma State team right now, depending on what direction the season goes. So I'm bringing back an old segment. Back in 2018, I came up with a segment for the podcast back when Nathan Ruiz was my beat partner.
Did I do this podcast? Did I do this segment?
I don't think we ever did. I don't think we ever brought this back after that.
Okay.
I called it Give Me Liberty or Give Me Cheez-Its.
Yeah, we did not do this one.
No. It was our bowl projection podcast or a segment for the podcast. So let me ask you first. We got Sugar Bowl. If you go win the Big 12, is a possibility. It's on the table.
Or you get there and you play TCU, and TCU wins and gets in the playoff.
They go in the playoff.
Yeah.
You got to still be in the top 11 at that point. Four-loss team in the top 11 might be a little shaky.
Yeah.
But it's a possibility. And Alamo, the Cheez-It Bowl, the Texas Bowl in Houston, the Liberty Bowl, and the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. I don't see Oklahoma State falling below that.
Unless they just lose the next three games.
Right. If they lose out, then they've got their bowl eligibility locked in already at this point.
Yeah.
If they lose out, they're going to be in a bowl somewhere. Probably could be one of those, which are at Dallas at SMU Stadium and at Fort Worth at TCU Stadium. Mm-hmm. Two places I don't think that Oklahoma State probably wants to go for bowl season.
Do they decline them? Do they just say we're going to stay home?
I don't think
probably
so.
Probably not. No.
Then you're turning down those 15 extra practices.
Yeah.
I don't think you turn down that.
That's true. Yeah.
So you got all those possibilities. I want to know first, where would you like to go? You personally, not Oklahoma State, Cowboys. If it's your choice, what bowl would you like to end up at?
Well, since Fiesta Bowl is off the table.
It is, yes.
Which is unfortunate.
That's too bad.
Because that's my pick. I think I'd have to go. I mean, Sugar Bowl would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you got a good game, a good team again,
right?
Things like that.
New Year's Six Bowl,
a New Year's Six Bowl, New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to New Orleans. I can always hang out in New Orleans,
right?
I still lean towards the Liberty.
That's solid. I'm not going to argue with that.
Hold on, Alamo Bowl. I think then Liberty. Okay. Because I think Alamo Bowl is going to be a good matchup, too, and a good game. And San Antonio, I haven't been to San Antonio in decades, so it'd be fun to go there. But I'm not going to complain if it's Liberty. But I think I'll go Alamo because of the matchup you get there. You get the Pac-12 team,
right.
A good game.
Yep.
I think that's where I lean a little
that's
bit.
That's all good. Not disagreeing with any of that. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl, which is back in Phoenix.
Oh, well, that's true.
It's at Chase Bank at Chase Field.
Yeah,
where the Diamondbacks play.
That's true.
Which I've never covered a football game in a baseball stadium. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I
forgot about that one.
That's an intriguing one. I'm a big fan of Memphis for all the other stuff.
Yeah,
the stadium's not great. The game is eh.
Central barbecue, everything like
right.
that.
Yeah, lots of stuff to do in Memphis as far as Sun Records. Facility, the tour there, the Civil Rights Museum, all those sorts of things that you can go and do in Memphis, make that week amazing. I love San Antonio, so I'm fully on board there as well. So, but now if I pose the question, gut feeling right now, this very moment, where do you think Oklahoma State ends up? What is your answer?
I think Memphis.
I do too. I
think they're going to end up in Memphis.
There's a lot of moving parts that are going to be involved, but I think that's where this team ends up. I think that's about the spot in the pecking order that they fall to. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep this segment going throughout the podcast as it becomes a little easier to try to project from week to week. So
yeah, I think Liberty.
I think that's a fair assessment. All right, is it time for the six pack?
It's time for the six pack. We're going a little longer today, so let's get the six pack going.
We need to wrap this up. We're asking a lot of our listeners at this point.
Yeah, we appreciate you hanging around.
We do. We appreciate you very much. All right, so the three football items for the Stone Cloud six pack today.
I'm ready. I did my homework.
We got one over under, two true false. I was always way better at true false.
Okay.
First one, over or under 16.3 points for Oklahoma State, as we mentioned earlier.
I'm taking the over.
Going over?
I'm going over.
All right. That's what Iowa State is allowing per game on the season, 16.3. You're going over?
I'm going over. I believe in Garrett Rangel and company.
All right.
That's also I think he's going to play quarterback.
I'm with you on all counts.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll just disagree with you just for the fun of it. I'm with you on
this. We've done
that
before in picks in high school. We were doing high school predictions and stuff on stuff.
Yeah.
Did opposites just to be opposite on some things. But, I just feel like OSU's going to figure some things out this week.
I feel like they are, too. I feel like, there's a lot of reasons why I think they move in the right direction offensively, get over that 16.3. Next one in the Stone Cloud six-pack, true or false, Oklahoma State will have a rusher over 60 yards. They did not do this last week.
True.
Going true?
I think Dominic's going to play the whole game this time.
Okay. I can see that. He definitely would have got there last week. Ended up in the 50s.
He had 50-some-odd yards in the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think I'm going to go true. I think they figured that out a little bit more than they were able to show last week. They got behind and had to start throwing too much.
Right. I'm going false on this one.
Okay.
I think they spread the wealth. I think they realize the need to protect Dominic a little bit, so I think they don't go crazy with him.
Yeah.
Until maybe late, if they need to go ice a game, something like that. But I think that they spread the carries around enough between the four guys that they're really rotating in now, with Jaden Nixon, Ollie Gordon, DeAndre Jackson. I think that they balance things out a little bit. I don't think anybody gets to 60. I think they'll run the ball effectively enough to go get the win, though.
Okay.
Last football question in the Stone Cloud six pack. True or false, OSU will record a sack. Was it two in four games? Is that right?
Yeah. They did not have one in 2 weeks. I'm going to go true.
Going true? You think they get one this week?
You know why? Because it's the least favorite thing that the sports term in my wife's opinion, but they're due. They are due for a sack. So I'm going true.
I'm agreeing with you as well.
Yeah.
I guess I should have gone an over under of 1.5 or something, maybe to make this a little bit more difficult, but I'm with you. I think they come around to it, and pull it off. So I think this defensive line figures some things out this week.
I think they're angry at this point,
right?
And I think that's going to really factor into some of this.
Yeah.
I think they're angry and they're tired of it, and it's going to make a difference.
We didn't talk about this, but they've been on the road 4 out of the last 6 weeks.
Yeah,
you're back at home now. You don't have to leave the state of Oklahoma again. And I think they can kind of catch their breath a little bit and settle back in.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part, not just of the defensive line, the team as a whole, and that's why I think they're going to win this game on Saturday. All right, moving on to the
draft.
The draft for our last three picks of the Stone Cloud six-pack. Last week we did future sporting events we would like the opportunity to cover. We're going historically, not just cover. We're attending as a fan this time.
Attending as a fan.
Past sporting events you wish you could have attended, and no favorite teams. So you got your Rangers hat on there. We're
doesn't mean in. I'm a Rangers fan.
So no Rangers, no Rangers events, no okay. Cowboys events for you.
Right.
Really? You shrugged off a whole lot of Super Bowls right there.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. All right. But for me, the 2016 Cubs World Series is out. The Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts Super Bowl. And as I mentioned to you, the AFC Championship game would have actually been my choice when they beat Tom Brady and the Patriots to get to the Super Bowl. But those are all off the table for me. I think it's your turn to go first.
It's my turn to go
so
first,
I
huh?
I will let you have
Man.
The floor.
Okay. Trying to think. This is really hard.
It is.
There's
it's
a
tricky.
Lot of sporting events.
There's a lot of stuff that you could throw out there.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with the Michael Jordan shot.
Against the Jazz?
Against the Jazz.
Ooh, well played, sir.
Because I loved Michael Jordan growing up and loved watching the Bulls.
Very
and
nice.
That's that pivotal moment that I remember as a kid. So I think I'm going to go the Michael Jordan shot.
That's strong. That was on my list. I'll be honest. That was very high on my list. My first pick, I'm going with the Carlton Fisk home run.
Ooh.
In Fenway in the playoffs. I'm not even a Red Sox.
Yeah.
I'm a disliker of the Red Sox.
Right.
I don't care for them at all. But that moment, the aura around that moment, and I always loved Carlton Fisk. I didn't really know him as a Red Sox player. He was a White Sox catcher by the time I learned who he was. But I was always fascinated with him for whatever reason. And so that would be my top moment in sports
That's
history
good.
that I would go back to.
That's good.
Pick number two.
Number two.
From you.
So there are lots of options, obviously. I mean, sports from wherever. I'm going to have to go baseball on this one. And I'm going to have to go with the Babe Ruth calling a shot.
Ooh, hey, I like that. That's good stuff
because
right there.
That's way back in the day.
Right?
And you get to see Babe Ruth call a shot and then actually deliver.
Right?
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
That's big time strong.
Yeah.
I'm liking your draft way better than mine already at this point.
I'm doing this on the fly. I'm thinking really hard here to pull out some things.
Right? Yeah. All right, that's really good.
You're number two.
My number two, I'm stealing one that, had I not already banned Rangers events, would have been on your list. This is a moment that was always special to me because I came home from a baseball game, turned on the TV, and it was at the end of this baseball game, Nolan Ryan's seventh no-hitter.
Man, I really – that was one of the Ranger bummers for me. I was like, because I've watched that game countless times in my life. That's a good one.
Yeah. I don't – I was young. I don't know what year that would have been, but
– 91.
91? So
– May 1st, 1991.
All right. Well, there you go. Now I know what date to put in on the flux capacitor whenever I I go back in time to watch this event. But I don't know why that game was on. Whether ESPN had just cut in and showed the ninth inning or what.
It was only broadcasted in Canada.
Right. So
it wasn't even broadcasted in Arlington.
Right. Right. So it was really weird that it was – that I assume it must have been just a situation where ESPN cut in, showed the last – might have been only been the last out.
Yeah.
I don't remember. We haven't discussed this, so I'm testing my memory here, but I'm assuming you're going to know. Roberto Alomar, last out?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yep.
So I've always had an affinity for that particular one. I was really connected to his 5,000th strikeout, but I didn't watch that Ricky
Henderson.
That's right. So
I think Ricky was the last out for the sixth no-hitter.
Oh, really?
I think I'd have to look that one up.
All right,
could be wrong. Don't hold me to that one.
All right, I won't. All right, very good. So that's my second pick. Number three for you.
Number three for me. I'm going to sneak around the favorite team a little bit here.
Uh-oh.
Been in the, so my all-time favorite player is Pudge Rodriguez. So, game
loophole.
Six We've of the 2003 World Series when the Marlins beat the Yankees.
Okay.
Because Pudge wins the World Series.
Right.
And he's not with the Rangers then.
That's right. That's
so,
fair.
I'm finding it.
Absolutely.
It's the one World Series he won. And I remember that night when my grandpa called me, so excited to see Pudge kissing home plate, all this stuff after the win. So that night, I actually, like, that's the moment that, like, wish I could have been there.
Mm-hmm. That's strong. Well played. Yeah. You found the loophole. I cannot take that away from you. Fun story.
And take away my grandpa's memory while you're at it, too, if you want to take it away. Go for it.
Right, yeah. Would you like to know who told me that the Marlins had won the World Series that night?
Who's that?
Jerry Seinfeld.
Really?
Yes.
Were you at his live show or something?
I was at a show at the Civic Center in Oklahoma City. And at the end of his shows back then, he would come out and just answer questions from the audience. For some reason, somebody said, did the Yankees win tonight? And he had been informed, no, that they had not.
Wow.
So he told me how the World Series had ended that year, that night.
Yeah.
So anyway, random information that I have from
watching. I almost said the Cubs 2016 just to mess with you, but I didn't do it.
I figured that might be on your list. All right, my last one. I'm going really off the board with this one, but I've always had a weird fascination with Secretariat.
Oh, yeah.
So seeing Secretariat win the Triple Crown in person would have been, I think, fascinating to me. To see a horse that was that much better than every other horse that ever lived would be an
incredible
moment.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
I still like your draft better than mine, but I'll take my three anyway.
It's all right. You win some, you lose some.
That's right. Well played, sir. All right. Well, with that, we want to remind you, go put your score comment or your score. I always say this wrong every week. Put your score guesses.
Predictions.
That's the word I'm looking
for.
Score predictions in the comments. We'll drink a free beer for you next week. And we'll talk to you from our post-game walk and talk from right over here in Boone Pickens Stadium.
Yeah, we get to be here this week.
It feels nice to be back at home
for
us.
I'm a little road weary.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. With that, thanks to everybody back at the studio for wrapping this up and putting it out there nicely for us. And thanks to you for watching and listening to the Cowboy Chronicles.